Sports, episode 63, Chris Major. Tonight on the Tech of Sports, our guest is Chris Major. Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. Join us every Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific at netcaststudio.com/live. You can join the chat room, listen to the show, and the next day the show is always available for download and streaming and embed, and you can take it and listen to it when you're on the move. So we make it available to everyone. So just like to welcome everyone tonight as we get in here to December. We have a should be a real interesting show tonight with Chris Major, the founder and CEO of the Human Potential Project. He's the author of The Power to Transform, Passion, Power, and the Purpose in Daily Life. And just a real interesting guy. He's been involved teaching strategies, corporate environment, the military, and in the world of sports. So we'll talk about that as well. And Chris, thanks for joining us and coming on tonight.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. And I was excited to talk to you because you're it's more than just sports and leadership. Your stuff is really what you're involved in is all over the board as far as how people can better themselves and maximize what they do. And does that tell us a little bit about how that relates to the Human Potential Project before we get going, and a little about yourself?
Let's see if I can wrap all that into one little nice wrapper. I went to school at the University of Washington. I was a not-so-great football player and ended up playing rugby, which was something I'd never heard of till I got to the U. Played and captained the team my senior year and went on to play first division for another 8 or 9 years. And what I didn't realize at the time was I was learning a lot about the phenomenon of teams, how they work together, what it took to be a high-performing team. I took up the study of Aikido, a Japanese martial art where you learn more of Eastern philosophy and energetic practices. And one of my fellow students was a sports psychologist. Now, in time, this was back in about 1980 when sports psychology was seen as something akin to voodoo or black magic. But I was fascinated by this guy as he had really scientific-sounding explanations for experiences that I had had and had just written off as too many bangs on the head or flashbacks to the 60s. And he and I got together and started speculating about what was it that really enabled athletes to be consistent winners. He'd been a world-class skier. Again, my rugby background, he was an individual performer, I was a team guy. We built a body of work designed exclusively for athletes, and we were after one simple thing. We wanted to isolate and reproduce the elements that led to consistent winning performance. And we built out a three-dimensional comprehensive work. I like that word comprehensive. You kind of say all over the boards, and you know, same thing, but there's actually a design to what seems like this vast expanse of work. It was highly successful with individuals, turned our attention to teams, worked with national teams, Olympic teams, as you and I were chatting a minute ago, with the Seahawks back in the days when they were in the AFC. And that work then caught the attention of the military. And much to our surprise, we spent years working with the Army, helping them redesign the way they train soldiers and officers, all the way up through some classified work with the Special Forces. And at the end of that, I said, you know, we've built a body of work that's proven highly effective. I don't want to keep training soldiers my whole life. We started doing work in the corporate world, which is what our primary focus has been for the last decade. And we rebranded the company. The original name was SportsMind, and it became the Human Potential Project in 2000 as we needed to move away from that association of strictly working with athletes. And so what we've got today is a comprehensive body of work that's all about how each of us, both individually and collectively as teams, can realize more of this thing we all talk about, our human potential.
You said you've worked with both individuals starting out with and then into teams, Chris. What's more difficult to work with, an individual who's kind of got real stubborn, or a team where you have a bunch of different personalities trying to mesh together?
Well, teams are a little more challenging because, like you just pointed out, if I've got one stubborn guy, I've got some things I can do to hopefully make a breakthrough with him. And eventually, if he continues to be stubborn and doesn't want to learn, then, you know, that's fine. We'll just go our separate ways. With a team, depending on what kind of team, you could have anywhere from 50 to 75 guys. And in the numbers like that, you're going to have a whole bunch of potential stubborn guys. So you've got to find ways to work with the different behavioral styles, the different learning styles, and the different communication dynamics of a team. And that can frequently be a fairly substantial challenge.
You said one other word in your little introduction that really hit home with me, and that word was consistency. And I get to talk to a lot of athletes and professional college, world-class athletes. Would you say, and they kind of tell me this, not directly, but I kind of sense this, and as being an observer and fan of sports, I can kind of tell, is consistency the hardest thing to achieve in sports, do you think?
I think it is. You know, it's relatively simple to produce what we call a flash-in-the-pan performance, you know, like a one-time only. You know, you could just have the right set of circumstances line up, and a performer can, you know, hit their record or personal best or whatever. But doing it again and again and again is a whole different matter. So consistency really is the fundamental aspect that we work on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you like you said, a one-time winner. You know, it can happen. It does happen in all sports. A guy comes out of nowhere, a girl comes out of nowhere to win something. But it's hard to back that up. And, you know, your Roger Federers of the world and Tiger Woods, if we're talking individual sports, these are guys that have done it for so long and done it consistently. I think that kind of separates them from, you know, the guy that's won one major or contended in one major, who still is a great player and a world-class player, but it takes a special person to be consistent over a decade or more of time.
That's correct. And, you know, if we look at the three aspects of performance, mind, body, and spirit, that's all about the mind. And as you know from your experience, if you ask high-level performers, doesn't matter what sport they're in, how much of your game is mental? The smart ones will tell you anywhere from 50 to 90%. And then you ask them, how much time do you spend doing mental training? You get pretty close to zero. Now you take a guy like Tiger or Federer, those guys, they have sports psychologists, performance coaches that they work with. Most of the folks, don't. And the challenge that we find in our corporate work is, you know, it's funny the way we think about business in this country. If you look at any arena, we just talked about sports, but it isn't just sports. Look at what goes on in the military. Look at what goes on even in the arts world. You know, dancers, musicians. What do they spend most of their time doing? Practicing. And what do they do the more advanced they get in their career? They spend more time with a coach, and the higher the caliber of coaching. Tiger Woods spends most of his time with his coach. In the business world, we do just the opposite. The farther along somebody gets in their career, the less time they spend learning. Most CEOs don't even have a coach because they live in a world where they're supposed to know everything. And what they're blind to is that what they learned 25 years ago, completely out of date nowadays. And then we're mystified about how we get blindsided by new competitors or new technologies. It's no wonder at all.
Yeah, and I give speeches, and I talk. One of the speeches I give is about how even in individual sports now, it's the successful people have a team behind them, whether it be a coach, a physio, a chef, the manager. So, you know, when a Novak Djokovic wins a U.S. Open, he thanks his team. That's something that's never happened in individual sports before, and I think that's great. And I spoke to a high school boys basketball team this past week, and they invited me to come to practice, and the coach wanted me to say a few words to the team. I tell them I've interviewed everyone from Serena Williams to CEOs of corporations and other world-class athletes, gold medal winners, Jenny Finch, and you know, they're part of a team. Even individual athletes now are part of a team, and that's really the only way they can sustain that consistent success.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Nobody wins anything all by themselves.
Yeah, that's true. This is the Tech of Sports, Chris, the show is called. So with your dealings in sports, maybe not as much in the past, it didn't come into play, but now through the sports, military, the corporate world, how much does technology come into play, or how many questions you get about how these organizations and should utilize technology?
Well, of course, you know, we live in a technology-driven world, and so you can't really ignore the whole question. But I guess, to me, the orientation is what we sometimes miss. Too often, technology gets driven by the needs of the IT guys and the things that they think are cool, and miss the fundamental point, which is the only purpose for technology and corporations is to enable the effective coordination of the people inside the corporation so they can produce customer satisfaction. They don't care about bits and bytes and bells and whistles. It's functionality that matters. And too often we lose sight of that. So when we talk to people about how to use technology, we're agnostic in terms of what the actual technology is, but it's the functionality that matters. How do we coordinate more effectively together? How do we work together? How do we communicate? And if you look at big international companies, the challenges get all the more pressing. So there's a big, big demand for effective coordination, and you can't do that without technology.
Absolutely, and we're with Chris Major here of the Human Potential Project. And I know the underlying meaning, Chris, in a lot of what you teach and talk about is leadership. And when you're talking with upper management or a CEO of companies, or you're talking with the rank and file military, are you telling them the same message, or do you tailor make the message for your audience?
Well, there's a certain set of principles that are universal, and then there's some things that you need to tailor make. You know, in the military, they have an option of giving orders, which doesn't work so well in most corporate environments. And many CEOs wish it were that simple, but it's not. And so, yeah, you have to customize what we're doing to the particular audience. You know, I've had conversations everywhere from the Commandant of the Marine Corps, you know, to various CEOs, and there's a certain level at which they all kind of face the same challenges. And so there's a uniformity to that. It doesn't matter if you're in the Marines or the CEO of Microsoft, you're looking at a world that's rapidly changing. So the question is all about, as leaders, how do we drive and manage that process? And what are the skills and competencies that are required?
Yeah, it is a challenge, and it takes special people to be leaders. What's your opinion on two fronts? When it comes to leaders and what I call yes men, the people below them that are always just trying to pacify the people in charge, whether it be sports. This is big in the music world with, you know, a big band or the current pop star of the moment. They have people under them that are just catering to them and, you know, giving them everything they want and telling them yes to everything. Should the leader realize that, or should the people underneath it that are the yes men, should they, you know, realize that that ultimately is probably a bad thing for the person who is their, I guess you can call them, employer?
Mm-hmm. Now you're going to get me going on my soapbox here, so careful
what
you ask for.
That's okay.
So let's make a distinction. There's a real leader, and a real leader wants people around him or her that are happy to say no, to question things, to even get in his face about stuff. The guys who are insecure aren't really leaders. They have, I wouldn't call them yes men, because what you described is really just like an entourage. It's a bunch of hanger-oners or, you know, oh yeah, whatever you say, it's brilliant. And, you know, those aren't really leaders. If you look at what's going on in most, well, I have to be careful, a lot of companies today, I think we're in danger. Right? We've got a lot of guys who've come up through the financial ranks. They're trained as financial specialists, and because they've got all these cool charts and graphs, they end up in leadership positions, and they're poorly, poorly trained and skilled to take care of the real role of leadership. So if you look at what's going on in the economy today, we've got all these guys sitting on boatloads of cash. Corporate America's got more cash on hand than they have probably ever. And they're doing nothing with it, because these guys say, well, we're waiting for certainty. Certainty is something that analysts wait for. Leaders understand that certainty arrives when we say so, right? And so we've got a dearth of leaders in the corporate world today, and we're paying a price for it.
But do you think we do have some leaders in the corporate world now that are at the top of the game? There's some people, I won't name them, but some big companies that really do have some pretty good leadership now, and the companies have either turned around or they're doing well. Why don't the other leaders see what's working and change to that? Is it ego?
Well, it's a combination of some of it's ego, some of it's a blindness, and then there's just the reality that it worked in my company doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work in your company. Right, we've got different challenges and different things that we're facing. That you turned around a retail company doesn't say anything about how to turn around a manufacturing company. So you have to be a little careful with the notion that there's some cookie cutter solution. What the real leaders do is they go out, They get engaged. They look, they get outside the office, engage with both the soup of their industry, the people in the company, and they put their attention on how do we get ourselves competitive both for today and tomorrow. And unfortunately, the guys whose background is only financial, they only have one solution, which is cost cutting. And that's just not it. It's the analogy I use is if we look back with some combination of humor and derision at medieval doctors, right? Because they only had one treatment for everything, which was bleed the patient, right? 100 years from now, business school students are going to look back at this generation of business leaders with the same sort of scorn because the only treatment we've got for anything is cost cutting. And that's just not the answer.
Yeah, good point. Good point, exactly. And Chris, we'll just take a break right now. We take a quick break here in the middle of the show for an Amazon.com ad. And just want to let everyone, all the listeners know, if they're doing any shopping on Amazon here, and it's the holiday shopping season, so it's a perfect time to get what you need on Amazon. You can use the affiliate link here at the studio, netcaststudio.com/Amazon, for any and all of your shopping needs. There's no extra cost to you, and it helps support the studio and the variety of programming that the studio brings to its loyal listeners. So once again, the affiliate link, netcaststudio.com/Amazon. And we appreciate that. The big holiday shopping season, Black Friday's in the rearview mirror, and it was a big Cyber Monday, so Amazon is going full force right now. So I know that you're a person that's pretty familiar with Amazon, Chris.
Indeed. You kind of set me up here a little too nicely, but let's not miss the opportunity. You can certainly go to Amazon and get my book,
Absolutely.
Power to Transform. They're doing a brisk business in it, and we appreciate all their help.
Absolutely. It's a good partner to be involved in, and they do a good work. And I haven't seen any of their drones flying around yet outside my neighborhood, but that's something to look forward to in a few years, maybe.
Yeah, I can hardly wait.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are wondering about that. So it'll be in Amazon. Jeff has always got he's a forward thinker. So he's
definitely a forward thinker.
Might be a little too forward. But I think his heart's and his ideas are in the right place.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any such thing as too forward. Some of his ideas may not come to fruition for some time, but just look at what that very process stirs up all around him. Drones may probably never come into play, but something else is going to, because now people have started to think about something they weren't thinking about before.
Absolutely. And Chris, while you were mentioning your book, Give your website and any other social media information how listeners can get in contact with you or follow you if they have questions.
Well, let's see. Social media is kind of a long list now. Our website is humanpotentialproject.com. You can go there and learn all about the work the company does. You can also go there and get the book. The book's got its own site, because let me take a moment here and explain to people that I resisted the notion of writing a book for years, because one of the things we teach people is you don't actually learn anything from books. Learning is the development of new competence, and while books are useful for helping you see something you might want to learn, actual learning only takes place through practice. Well, with technology today now, we can actually do some of the stuff electronically that we could only do live and in person over the years. So I put the book together, but the book in and of itself is, of course, I think it's good, but it's not going to transform your life the way that we really want to. So it also takes you to a website where you interact with other people who are working their way through the book, or you can do the assignments that are sent out there, which is actually how the process is designed to work. And that is thepowertotransform.net. And when you buy the book, it gives you a password to use to get onto the site and get to become part of this transformative community. And then lastly, I'm CD Major, MAJER, on Twitter.
I'm glad you mentioned that about the it being more than just about a book now, Chris, because actually I do the tech segment on Sirius XM PGA Tour Radio each week, and I reviewed the David Ledbetter, who's a golf instructor, his new he's put it out on DVD, a 5-DVD set of golf instruction, and it's four DVDs of instruction, but the last one is an interactive software that takes you on to the Ledbetter site, and you can interact directly with Ledbetter professionals that will review clips of your swing right online and such. So I think that's really I wouldn't call it the next trend. That's where we're at right now, but that's really becoming something that's catching people's attention.
Well, it's going to catch people's attention, and it really is where everything needs to go. Because, I mean, let's face it, if you and I sit and watch four DVDs, you know, of Golf Swing, we're going to go, wow, that's really interesting. Then we're going to go out and do what we've always done before, because the body doesn't learn by observing. You know, it learns by doing. And the problem with, you know, just going to the range and practicing, which is what most people think is how they're going to improve their game, is all you do is get better at being not so good. So what you need is that interaction with the coach. That's the key thing.
If I watch 6 straight hours of golf instruction, Chris, I'll be asking my wife to get a 4-iron and hit me over the head.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're right. You're right. You got to do as much as you observe. Or more. Observe 1 hour, do 2 hours.
Do 2 hours, but there's no point in doing it by yourself. You got to get somebody watching you who knows what they're watching.
You also mentioned back a few minutes ago a little about the media. And is the media too powerful these days? And are they affecting the leaders in a negative way, do you think?
Well, I guess it depends on how we're going to characterize the media. Most corporate leaders are frankly less concerned with the media and more concerned with Wall Street. And that's where my beef is. We've got all these guys on Wall Street, the analysts who follow and rate all the stocks. And unfortunately, we've got too many corporate leaders dancing to the strings coming from Wall Street, as opposed to, in many cases, doing what's really in the best interest of their companies. This drive for quarterly profits is doing a lot of damage, frankly, to our economy in the long term, as we keep pulling capital out of where it should be, which is growing the capacity of our businesses to grow and deliver more products and services, and we keep trying to take it out so we can have profits so the stock stays up. That's not the way you grow companies, and frankly, that's not the way that capitalism is designed to work.
But haven't they been concerned about Wall Street's opinion? Did that start back in the 80s, do you think? That's not just happened yesterday.
No, it's not just happened yesterday, but it's been growing increasingly strong over the years. You've got now this unfortunately self-supporting negative cycle of guys who come up through the financial side inside the companies. They're used to listening to and interacting with the analysts. The analysts support these guys in becoming CEOs. Then you got them listening to the analysts about what they should do with their companies, and it's not healthy. It is not healthy at all.
So you're if somebody's a finance major, Chris, you'd be telling them to maybe change majors.
Well, not necessarily. We need finance guys, you know. But it's, think of it this way: you're a sports guy. If we go to a Falcons game this weekend, there's the players on the field. There's the coaches in the sidelines, and then way up in some little box up on the top of the stadium, there's a bunch of guys with little green eye shades who are charting all the stats on every play, right? Okay. No coach in his right mind would either put the stat guys on the field or let them call the plays. That's what we do in business.
But sports teams now, with the advent of Moneyball, they've started hiring numbers guys to be more important in the organizations now, in professional sports, college sports, even high school sports. Now they rely on people analyzing the stats more than just a coach with a clipboard, and whether it's a person doing that or an app or a software program.
It's true that they've got a lot more emphasis now on grinding out numbers, but in the end, it's still a competent coach that calls the plays. I know, because I work with lots of sports coaches. I can promise you there's not one of them who's sitting on the sidelines going, gosh, I need to talk to those guys up in the analyst booth when the game's underway. They'll do that before and after. Yeah, we need to learn everything that we can, but my point is those guys don't run things in any other arena.
No, and as somebody who's covered the NFL Combine, they look at everything. They look at how a guy walks, how a guy, they have sleep monitors on them, tracking how well they sleep at night. Is that, I know not every one of those things is used when determining whether they should draft a player or not. Have they gone away from watching the tape or just watching a guy in person and saying he may not be the biggest, the quickest, doesn't look the greatest in the shoulder pads, but this guy can just flat out play football, and we need a guy like that on our team. Have they gone away from that?
Well, they certainly haven't gone away from it entirely, but there's a difference between data and information. Right, so what we've got now in many cases is, you know, we've got the capacity to generate vast reams of data about people, but that doesn't necessarily inform important choices. I mean, if you look at some of the guys who are great players in the NFL this year, the great rookies, yeah, you know, most of them are second, third round draft choices. So what did all that analysis give you? Yeah, so Russell Wilson. You know, and so you know, if our analysis, if it's all data driven, how the heck did you miss that? You know, or Wilson or Kaepernick, you know, take your choice. Look at all the guys that are now stars in the NFL who didn't show up in all that analysis.
And it's possibly because those guys worked harder because they didn't have everything given to them or the big payday right away the moment they were drafted. I think that the teams that find those players in the later rounds tend to be your Super Bowl champions, usually 2-3 years down the road.
Right. Well, right. I mean, let's face it. If you take any position in the NFL, doesn't matter. Let's take 25 defensive backs. So I'm looking at all these rookies. If you look at their physical capabilities, there's not much difference between them. I mean, come on. Of those 25 top guys, in their 40 times, there might be at most a half-second spread amongst all of them. Mm-hmm. You know, there might be an inch spread in their vertical jump. What matters at that level isn't, you know, which guy can do the 40/10th of a second faster. It's character. Which guy's really going to work harder? Which guy's going to be a better teammate? Which guy's a better learner? The biggest problem that a lot of these guys find is, you know, you may have been great in some simple college scheme, but you throw them into the NFL where things are more complex and happen a lot faster. They can't adapt. We don't have any way of putting a micrometer on that. You've got to, you know, you got to use not just your gut, but you've got to look at the experience, and you've got to really look this guy in the eye. And if you don't have a good way of assessing he's going to fit with our team, all the data in the world isn't going to do any good.
Same comes into play when you're trying to identify a guy that could be a leader of the team, I'm sure.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. You know, there's no predicting. Well, in some cases, you can predict. You can look at, you know, who are the guys? Was he a team captain in college, et cetera, et cetera? Eventually, they're going to emerge, but not always. And, you know, that has to do a lot with trust. It has to do a lot with mood. It has to do a lot with their capacity to communicate. And, you know, in sports, of course, they've also got to lead by example.
Absolutely. What's the one piece of advice, Chris, you would give, as we wrap up here, you would give to a 20-year-old boy or girl in college right now who's maybe undecided with a major, maybe has a major picked out, and they want to be a leader. They want to be a contributor down the road. What's the one piece of advice that you could give them?
I wouldn't worry about the major right now. What I would do if you really want to be a leader is go throw yourself into something where leadership is required. Go volunteer someplace, take on some student activity, head up some committee to do something so you get your hands and your body involved in the whole phenomenon of leadership. It isn't something you're going to get by studying. It's nice to get a little bit of background and you can read about it. But in the end, we've got to understand that leadership is a practice. Right, and the only way you're going to get good at it is by doing it.
Just like anything else, just like with my golf swing.
Exactly. Mine, that's going to take a lot more practice.
mine's taking a lot of practice. I'm shutting it down for the rest of the year, but I'll be back out in 2014 trying to improve it. What's next for you, Chris? What do you have coming down the pipeline?
Well, I'm putting together the outline for another book. We've got a couple of very interesting corporate projects coming up. Our business starts to wind down this time of the year as everybody's, you know, focusing on the holidays. So this is for me a time to do writing and get ready for a great year. And up in my part of the world, ski season is upon us. So I'm going to test out my newly repaired knee and see how it works.
Be careful with that. And I'm not a skier, but I love watching it during the Olympics. We'll have that to look forward to.
It's coming right up. That's right.
Absolutely. How can listeners, give one more time, how listeners and viewers, Chris, can follow you and your website and anything else you want to promote?
Sure. Well, let's go start with the book. You can go to Amazon, and it's The Power to Transform, Chris Major. Amazon's got, I don't know how many, but they're moving them pretty briskly. They're making a great holiday gift. You've got the book site, which is thepowertotransform.net. That'll take you to where you can buy the book, which frankly just links you back to Amazon. And more importantly, you can go online and interact with other people who are working on transforming their lives. And if you're interested in the work we do for companies, it's humanpotentialproject.com, and I'm CD Major on Twitter.
And Major is M-A-J-E-R.
Correct.
Yep. Just want to make sure people know that. And Chris, as we wrap up here on the Tech of Sports this week, I always ask my guests one last question. What's the, since we're talking about technology on here a little bit, what's the one gadget or piece of tech you can't live without?
Oh, boy. Well, there's my iPhone and my Mac. That's it. I live with those things.
You don't need anything else?
Well, I won't go that far, but if I were to try those two, I'm in big trouble.
We all would be. We all would be. That phone now is attached to us, and if somebody calls and you don't answer, they start getting worried. So it's not like the old days where you leave a message at the tone and maybe they get back with you or not.
Right. You know, it's funny. You watch movies, now you can tell how old they are when people are making calls on payphones.
Well, that's the one thing now that you can watch a movie, and I've thought about this, and I've heard other people talk about it. You can kind of tell the year or within a few years of when that movie was out, depending on what kind of cell phone they're talking
about. Yeah, exactly.
And that's something that's going to be a giveaway now in movies for a while, I think. Technology is a dead giveaway.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, appreciate you coming on. Great talking with you, and I'm glad we set this up, and have a great holidays. Appreciate you coming on the Tech of Sports.
Hey, thanks. I loved it. I hope it was interesting. I hope your listeners enjoy, and anytime you want to do it again, let me know.
Just want to let everyone know that Netcast Studio has many other shows which may be of interest to you, and you can head over to netcaststudio.com and check out all the shows that are available. And Netcast Studio also has the new podcast, the internet broadcast directory, Two Thumbs Up Media at twothumbsupmedia.com. You can check out all the content there. So we'll be back next week with another episode, and thanks for listening to the Tech of Sports. It's been a Netcast Studio production.